Obviously, there's a lot for thought there, and a lot of things that said are controversial, lots of things said that people will agree with. Today, there's a lot of families in the room, and they've waited, in a sense, to get their say, and there's a huge amount of people. So if you forgive me, there are some families. I'm going to take some questions and comments on block because of time, and we'll work through them. But there are a number of people over the last week that have been particular. I'm going to take a common question, first of all, from Francis Main, and then one from John Loughran. So if we could go with those two first of all, please.
Thanks very much. It's okay. Can you hear this mic okay? Yeah, grand now. Hugh, just around the HET, you said that it was your original idea and you set it up, and haven't been one of those families who did engage with the HET and went through the process. I have a number of issues with the organisation and structure of the HET, that like your comments on. When we first met with the HET as a family to discuss the murder of my brother, who was shot dead at the age of 21 by a British soldier, there were a number of questions that we asked them around their organisational structure and around their terms of remit. I must say at that meeting, they weren't able to answer us. They didn't know what their terms of reference were. And when I asked, was this a review or an investigation, they weren't quite sure exactly which it was. I did ask them what the outcome of, you know, when they compiled their investigation, what would happen with their report. And they told me their report would go to a senior manager, or their senior manager, senior investigating officer, and that he would edit it, if you like, for want of a better word. And then the family would get a copy of it. I asked if the family could see their report, the investigating officer's report, before that happened on the basis of transparency. And I was told that we couldn't. I also had a number of other questions around the structure. Who was going to be doing the investigation? Who would, if a file was going to be sent to the DPP, who would make that decision, etc., etc.? And the officers that evening asked me when I put my questions in writing to them. So I did. I emailed the senior investigating officer present that evening the next day. His reply to me, which took around 2 weeks for him to come back to me, was quite aggressive. He didn't answer any of my questions. However, he did set up a second meeting. And at the second meeting, we went along. And to be honest with you, at the second meeting, I was somewhat more reassured, because it was a different style of meeting. The atmosphere was definitely more relaxed, and I felt that the guys were being open and transparent with me. And as part of that meeting, what they asked us to do as a family to assist them was to obtain records via the Public Records Office about our brother's death. And I said, absolutely. The next day, I put in a request through the Public Records Office, again, on the basis of this maximum disclosure, et cetera, et cetera. So we now have an organisation that I felt lacked structure, lacked the terms of reference, and they're asking the family to get records to investigate a murder via the public records. I waited 9 months under Freedom of Information request via the Public Records Office, only to have a letter telling me that there had been a 30-year bar put on the records, and they were now adding another 70 years onto that 30 years so that my family could not find out the circumstances of my brother's death. That happened, and the minister for that department actually released these documents, these public records, to a solicitor, whom I actually believe is in the room, and the solicitor delivered these documents to my home. Now, you talked about files. This was a very small file. There was very little in it. There was certainly nothing controversial in these public records. He delivered them to my home, and I was then threatened legally with a writ. The chief constable went and had an extraordinary court meeting at 12 o'clock at night. And this is just less than a year ago, to have these documents taken back from me, or, as he thought, not given to me. So my question around the HET is, first, it didn't appear to have structure. It certainly wasn't transparent. Maximum disclosure was an absolute joke, because look at the lengths that the police went to stop my family from even getting documents that were in the public domain, such as inquest documents and post-mortem documents. When you started off by saying that this was an idea that you had come up with and it was probably an original idea, I just felt, had the idea ever been formulated, had anybody sat down, had they put a structure around it, had they put a process around it, what were the terms of reference for the HET? And certainly, if I could just put on record from my family's point of view, I would not want the HET resurrected. I really feel it has traumatised myself and other families all over again. Our brother certainly wasn't treated as an equal citizen in life, and in death, he's been treated more unequally.
Another question.
Yeah, we're going to take a couple at a time. Is it John?
I suppose just a few. John Loughran, on the board of Relatives for Justice. Again, just to acknowledge the fact that you are here today, Q, and a number of other senior police officers, I think it is significant that we are in this room having this conversation. And in many ways, it proves that we can have the conversation. I want to take issue with a number of points that you made, certainly around the HET. And I would put it to you that the approach around the HET actually put the whole issue around the past and policing back into the political agenda, one at a time. The challenge should have been to decouple it. The other point that you'd made was around an amnesty. Certainly in our own family case and many of the families who are here, there has been a de facto amnesty for state agents, state personnel over a 40-year period. And in many ways, the point that you'd made around the HET, I think, when you look at it now, has actually been a stooge for a political agenda that emerged from London, which is fairly aggressive about how they conceal the British state's role in terms of their dirty war here over the last 40 years. That said, you've also dismissed legal process and the role of courts and communities or legal solicitors. The challenge is that in the absence of that, there's no other process. Exactly. There's a piecemeal approach. But furthermore, when you have the PSNI in courts blocking information, blocking disclosure, it actually undermines confidence in the current policing arrangements, and I think that's a real challenge. The big issue now, when you look at it, now that you've moved on, and lucky you, the issue is...
I thought about coming back.
The issue is... Based on the knowledge and based on the fact that the British state hasn't moved around its legal obligations around a right to truth and fulfilling Article 2 obligations and fulfilling commitments politically given into state killings, would you have gone forward in terms of promoting the idea of the HET as it was constituted then?
Yeah, we'll take these two questions and then there's a few more.
One is, I didn't dismiss the legal process. Everyone's got a right to the legal process. My observation was, is it going to deal with the situation in any sort of sense of timing that allows people to get to the truth or at least get some degree of resolution that they currently haven't got? Of course, I think I said several times that the rule of law is absolute and I've no issue with that. And it's difficult to comment on individual cases, to be quite honest. And the issue around maximum disclosure, it was, as I said at the beginning, was constrained by Article 2. And the feedback from about 80% of the people we had interviewed who had been through the process were satisfied. But of course, 20% are not satisfied. It's not going to work for everyone. Very hard to talk about about individual cases. I don't understand the issues you described. I don't recognise them because, of course, I wasn't... here a year ago, but I fully understand and respect your view of that. What you don't have now is anything else.
Yeah, we don't have anything.
And that's the frustration. Yours would have been a case where, at the beginning, when I set this up, I really didn't think families like yours would come to us because of the concerns you clearly have about us not being independent and not actually delivering what you expected.
Families like ours didn't have any choice. We were contacted by the HET, as many other families were, and were told that these investigations were going to go on ahead, whether we engaged or not.
Absolutely right. But
we were left with no choice.
No, I understand that. No, I understand. But of course,
we were emotionally blackmailed, and that was one of my points. 100%.
Right.
Emotionally blackmailed.
If I could just answer, we had agreed that we would ask, we would give every. It was around equality in a way, around asking every families to say go away. And we would not engage the family. That was the point I made at the beginning. If people didn't want to engage, I respected that. My frustration is, where do you then go? And because there wasn't a broader structure, which was unfolding through the Lord Eames and Dennis's work, because that didn't happen, you now end up with nothing, dissatisfied of the HET, which I fully understand and respect. I didn't expect everybody to think it was a good idea at all. Of course I didn't. It wasn't. It wasn't a good idea for everybody. It was never going to be.
Families didn't engage because they wanted to. It was because they felt that they had to.
Well, we didn't. Well, I think you can only speak for... I understand why you didn't engage. I don't want to get into sort of you said, she said. I don't think that helps, but I can tell you, because I have sat, unlike the inspector who examined the HET, I did visit the HET routinely. And many families, as part of a resolution, asked to see me. And I never said no. I went and I sat in those rooms with the family liaison officer, with the report, with as many of the family that wanted to come, and it was generations. It wasn't just that, it was the generation, the third generation, young people, still really interested in what happened to their great-grandfather. You know, I sat there for hours talking through what they wanted to talk through, and they said it worked for them. It's exactly the point. We're arguing about the same point. It wasn't going to work for everyone. People felt it was hopeless, useless, or whatever. I respected that. My frustration was there was nothing else for you. So I get the bit about you feeling it's that or nothing. The question around why was there nothing else was because the politicians who had commissioned Eames Bradley then sat on their hands. Or you could have gone somewhere else. And likewise, and it wasn't actually always around, was this a Republican family, a nationalist family, a family, you know, a loyalist family, a Protestant family. That wasn't all. There wasn't a... One group saying no, other groups saying yes, which is what I thought would happen. You know, some of the widows would not have been too happy, I think, either, because some would have wanted a different outcome. They had nothing else. So I understand why there's that frustration around what else do I do. I couldn't fix that. What I was trying to do was to do something because I felt there was an obligation to do it. I'm really sorry it didn't work, because I had an ambition for it, but that's where it was.
Francis, I'm conscious time is really, really tight, and I really appreciate what people have said, but there are a number of families want to raise a number of question, comment type things, and I know it's all part, and I know if people heard at the back, but what Francis and her family were saying, they didn't have a choice. The HET was imposed upon them, and they didn't have the choice. That in case, because there wasn't a mic in that, and I want to reiterate that.
Can I just bring in, I'm just interested, there's Pat Bays in the audience here. I know Pat very well. Her father, of course, was shot dead by the MRF. And the other side of this coin is that if the HET hadn't been wound up, you may very well now, by now, have had the report you've been after for years. Yeah. Correct?
I think we have a choice, because the initial letter had said, if you want to engage, fine. If you don't, we're going ahead anyway. So, of course, we engaged, as we had done 20 years previously with Ted Cook, when he was investigating our father's murder. Now, we talked to the HET for over 7 years, and that all came to a halt last July. We're annoyed that we wasted 7.5 years. We want our report. We want it. Mm. And why can't we have it? Can anybody answer me that?
Thanks, Patricia. That's very important. Okay. And there's loads of families in that position. There's a number of other just people that, because there's been so many requests coming in from families, I'm going to take another couple of families. There's one family I'm going to ask before Dennis comes on, and it'll be Jim McCabe, because I think it's fitting towards the end. But I know that Margaret Kennedy has a comment or a question, and I know that Carmel Quinn does, and I know that there are two organisations want to ask a question. So if we can ask for Margaret Kennedy and Carmel Quinn.
It is not.
Keep going.
My mummy and my aunt Dorothy were murdered by the British soldiers in 1971. We didn't get any justice or closure at the time. So the only help we got was from friends, family, the likes of Clara O'Reilly and Mark Thompson and Relatives for Justice. And only for them, we wouldn't have got as far as we have at the minute. I was asked to go ahead with the HET team. I had no confidence in them at that time, and I stated then that I didn't have any confidence in the HET because it was the PSNI investigating the PSNI. So, you know, where was the sense in that? So I was promised that they would do everything in their power to find out exactly what had happened, try and get the family closure on my mummy and Dorothy's death. Our case was a bit different, where the soldiers, the shooters that were involved, we knew, we had their names, so we knew the soldiers' names, but that didn't make our case any easier. So they had finished the review and told me that I took me in February 2011, I think it was, that the report was done and I would get it within 3 months. That report is still sitting on a PSNI person's desk over in London, England, wherever. Why was I not allowed to get that report sent? Now, the excuse from one of the HET people was that he wouldn't allow the review to be sent out to me because it was so distressing. Now, through the HET and their lies, their deceit and their neglect of all the promises they made, they put our families on emotional roller coasters. It brought up all the trauma. They might as well have murdered my mummy and my Aunt Dorothy all over again, because that's exactly what it felt like. We need some sort of closure. We need the British government to stand up and admit that their soldiers were wrong. They were covered up by the HET. Where's the justice in that? What about our justice? You were saying about human rights. We have a human right to find out exactly what happened to our family members and who are the HET to take that human right away from us. One last thing. We do need a proper investigation, and one that doesn't involve the PSNI. How will this be achieved?
Hello, Mr. Ord. It's just a couple of things that you actually said jumped out at me. The whole thing around the HET. The older the case, the older the families was one of the things, and that you were set up to fail. But is the truth not that you were actually set up as a stalling technique by the British state, especially in the case of state killings? And your total disregard for Dr. Lundy's report, it's just one thing I'd like to ask. Have you ever, when you were in charge of the HET, had Colonel Jackson in to question him about the murders carried out under his command?
Okay, so they're very long and detailed questions. In terms of if there's a report, the whole idea of the HET was that people got reports, and that was the whole structure. So I can't explain why in 2011 you didn't get the report that was written. One part of the process, and some were distressing. Some were very distressing. That's why we had family liaison officers. That's why we all sat down and went through them with the family, so they understood what we had found. That was the whole plan of it. And yes, and so I can't explain that. I'm sorry, because the whole idea was the person got the report. That was exactly why we set it up. And on the was it a stalling technique? No. Well, the answer is I hadn't. It wasn't in my mind when we set it up. This is a clever way of actually preventing anything else. There was nothing else. The reason I set it up was because I was concerned that I was having lots of people asking to come and see me, and I was seeing all of them, of course I was, who were saying, we want more done, and nothing was being done. So I'm sorry to disabuse you of it, but it was not. I was not told by anyone to set it up. I set it up That's in a way why I'm, notwithstanding the understandable criticisms which I respect, I set it up because I thought it was important to do something. I set it up with the very best of intentions. I set it up in the full realisation that if I could make... Well, I said I think somewhere, if I can make a difference for one family, it's been worth it. We've made difference to a lot more than one family. We were never going to resolve the issues for everybody. On the independence point, we did build in as best we could, and it's back to why did I have it? Because no one else wanted it. I was criticised roundly for it in the report for it being on PSNI land. It was a completely neutral piece of land with a building on it, which had nothing else to do with policing on it. We did bring in, we did have teams that were independent investigators, i.e. they were not and never had served in Northern Ireland to deal with the cases where we felt that was really important. Of course, on many families, more than happy for retired investigators from here to deal with it. And there was a huge cost implication, but we did set up teams that were independent. So well, you should have had a team that had no PSNI / RUC officers on it, investigating it. That was the vision. Whether it worked or not, of course, is a different issue. But it's back to the same point, is we can continue to say, look, your HET was rubbish all. Well, I'm sorry if I didn't work for everybody. I know, because I've met the families myself, and the independent research tells me this is a fact. We did make a difference for some. No one else, it seems to be. We've got legal, there's all sorts of legal work going on, I know, and I respect that too, and it's taking a long period of time. Some of it's been running for many, many years. There's judicial reviews into the particular case that's been mentioned. I also know there isn't anything else. And until there is, we are going to have to continue to have this binary conversation around what we have done wrong to date, rather than looking forward and saying, right, what do we do next? And my frustration around this is we are, you know, you can ask me lots of questions about individual cases. What I'm really interested in is what is it we need to do now to make a difference looking forward? Because what we've got, clearly, isn't delivering. I've no idea.
As you know, this is obviously a very deeply goes to the, and rightly so, when people have lost relatives, rightly goes to the core of their being and their lives. Like, people have given 30, 40 years of their lives campaigning, and you know, getting this right is so imperative. And you know, appreciating everything that you've said and all the discussion we've had today, but there are fundamentally, and we don't have the time to go into every single argument, fundamental issues that lay at the heart of this, and where people clearly see it, that the state used, you know, its resource and vested interest in a number of cases not to deliver. And I know we can go back and forth about that, but Anne-Marie, there are other families that haven't spoken, and yet, this room is packed with families, and please bear with me, because they may echo some of the same sentiments. Willie Lockhart wants to say something, as does JJ McGee. Again, people who have lost, you know, siblings and family. And then there are two organisations. I think we take two comments from them. And I think Harry Maguire is here. He works in community policing on the ground here. And Mary McCallan is here with people with different experiences outside of the immediate community that we're in as well. So we take comments, and please keep them brief, because time is of the essence too, please. So bear with it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Welcome to Belfast, Hugh. Thank you. John, my name is Willie Lockner, and I'm a brother of one of the men who was murdered on the 3rd of February 1973, along with five neighbours. Now, the fact of the matter is, we got no justice of any description to this day. The police never investigated it. The press were more than quick to put it, the media, on their screens and on the news, that were all six gunmen, which was totally lies. Never contradicted by anyone of the state, until there was a little piece in the Daily Mirror 6 weeks later saying they apologised to families, none of them were carrying guns. That's okay. The point I would like to make is this. The police made no attempt whatsoever, the IUC, no attempt whatsoever to investigate. Never spoke to me, my mother, anybody else. My brother's wife, I suspect it. She had three children. She had a baby boy. A month after he was buried on St. Patrick's Day, that girl had her of that family through all that stress and strain. Nobody came with any assistance. I have to make that very, very clear. I am still very bitterly disappointed in the authorities. the coroner, the inquest, was a joke. Everyone knew what happened on that night. My mother died of a broken heart because she wrapped my brother out of bed to go to the coroner to try and help another man in, and that is genuine. That is an established fact. The judge in the so-called tribunal told my mother that nobody asked him to do it. He went out of his own accord, so he was entitled to shut down because he was Catholic. My point is, that is very deep. I can honestly say that I have lived through fairly tough times. The point I'm making is this, that the HET made inquiries to my brother's wife for permission to investigate the case. She phoned me and I said no. She was looking at advice and I said no, for I thought I was in a position to help her. And she asked me why, and I said, well, because it's the IUC investigating the IUC. It's going to come to absolutely nothing. They've ignored us totally up to now. Later on, that evening, they rang her back and she told them no. They rang her the following day. They asked her, could they make a report on her behalf without her seeing it before it went to press? So luckily enough, she said no. So all I'm saying is this. What I have learned here today, and I know we're dealing with legacy of the past, very difficult for all of us. And that's why I said, very commendable that Jack Lee came here, and I appreciate it for one. And my point is simply, the British government have hid the facts of the truth of not only the New Lodge, but of an awful lot of murders that they're responsible for. Now, the politicians must, because they run the country at the end of the day, so they must accept responsibility, and also our local politicians here, of all parties, needs to get this thing sorted out, because it's going to fester and fester for years, and we don't want this to continue. Thank you.